Okay, our next presentation is Water Management for Sustainable Creeping Bentgrass Putting Greens. Presenting is Mark Miller.
Thank you for the introduction and good morning. My name is Mark Miller and I'm a master's student at Michigan State University, and today I'll be talking about three different irrigation scheduling methods for creeping bentgrass putting greens in Michigan. So to start out, there's a lot of public pressure to reduce inputs on golf course, whether it be reduce your water that you use or reduce the amount of nitrogen or phosphorus that you use on your golf course. And if the turf community doesn't come up with valid ways to reduce these inputs, the public will. And another aspect of this study is that it's done on a USGA putting green, so it inherently has a low water holding capacity and a low nutrient holding capacity, so that presents another challenge. So we're looking for scientific validations of these water conservation methods. So there's a debate ingrained in turf grass culture between light and frequent irrigation and deep and infrequent irrigation, and there are pros and cons to each method. But irrigation frequency has been shown to impact rooting depth, disease and algae formation, and thatch production. And research has also shown that less frequent irrigation every 4 days as opposed to every 1 or 2 days has resulted in better turf quality, better shoot density, and increased root length density. And another study also showed that plant available water is a function of rooting depth and can be used as an alternative method to schedule irrigation. So I have three treatments for this study, and my first treatment is a daily replacement of 80% evapotranspiration, and I get my ET data from a weather station located close to my putting green on the research farm. The second irrigation method is a rooting depth adjusted irrigation method, or RDAI, and that takes into account the soil's physical properties as well as the rooting depth. So the volume or the field capacity for my sand-based putting green is at 20% volumetric water content. The permanent wilting point is at 5% volumetric water content. So the difference between those gives me 15% plant available water within the root zone. And if, for example, I have 10 centimeters of roots that I'm managing times that 15% plant available water, I only have 1.5 centimeters of water that I can manage that's available to the plant. And this treatment dictates that once 50% of this 1.5 centimeters of available water is depleted, according to my ET data, that I re-irrigate back up to field capacity, and I take rooting measurements twice per month. And my last irrigation treatment is a soil moisture-dependent irrigation treatment, or SMDI. And for this treatment, I utilize a TDR probe, which is time domain reflectrometry, and I use a 7.5 centimeter probe to monitor the water content. And once it reaches 10% volumetric water content or below, I re-irrigate back up to 20% volumetric water content. So my first treatment's more of a light and frequent method, and the last treatment, the SMDI, is more of a deep and frequent, and the RDI is intermediate between the two. I'm looking at numerous things in this study, and the measurables that are underlined are what I will be discussing today in my presentation. I'm looking at irrigation volumes, irrigation frequency, leachate quantity and quality, where I analyze my leachate for nitrate concentration and soluble phosphorus concentration, and knowing the quantity of leachate collected, I can calculate the total nutrient load of each irrigation treatment for the entire year. I'm also looking at rooting depth, root mass, dollar spot incidence, localized dry spot percent coverage, green speed, turf color and quality, and I'm also taking digital images to analyze percent green ground coverage. The statistical design for my project is a completely randomized design with three replications of each irrigation treatment, and the diagram on the bottom left shows one main block, and this main block is replicated three times for each treatment, and within each main block, there are three lysimeters, which are 265-liter watering tanks, and the diagram shows where the lysimeters are placed by the yellow blocks. And I divided each main block into three repetitions in order to account for the variability in leachate collected. And the picture on the right shows a collection vessel which the leachate drains to off the side of the green, and it drains into 5-gallon buckets where I collect when precipitation or irrigation causes leachate to occur. So getting into the data, the irrigation treatment effects on the 2010 irrigation volumes, where the units are in millimeters of irrigation, and the orange columns denote months when irrigation volumes were significantly different. In June, the SMDI treatment used the least amount of irrigation, and for the month of July, the daily ET treatment used the least amount of irrigation. In August, the daily ET and the RDI treatment were similar in the amount of irrigation they used, with the SMDI treatment using the most amount of irrigation. In September, the daily ET treatment also used the least amount of irrigation, and in October, the RDI treatment used the least amount of irrigation. But for the yearly total, the daily ET treatment used about 40% less irrigation than the SMDI treatment. For the 2011 effects on irrigation volumes, where the units are in millimeters of irrigation, we didn't see any significant differences in May and August, but in June, the daily ET treatment again produced or used the least amount of irrigation. In July, the daily ET treatment and the SMDI treatment used the least amount of irrigation. This graph shows the irrigation effects on 2010 leachate volumes, where the y-axis denotes the leachate in millimeters, and the x-axis is the month when data was collected. And the numbers across the top are the LSD of 0.05, and red numbers indicate months when data was significant. And in June, the daily ET treatment produced the most irrigation, or the greatest leachate volumes. And in the months of July, August, and September, the SMDI treatment produced the most amount of leachate. But for the yearly total, the daily ET treatment and the RDA treatment were similar, and they produced the least amount of leachate. In 2011, the leachate volume data showed a similar trend, but March through May, we didn't see any significant differences, which was expected because we didn't actually apply much irrigation. But in June, the RDAI and SMDI treatments were similar and produced the most amount of leachate, and the daily ET treatment used the produced the least amount of leachate. In July, however, the daily ET treatment produced the least amount of leachate, and the SMDI treatment produced the most, but the RDAI was intermediate and similar to both of the treatments. In August, though, the RDAI and daily ET treatments were similar, producing the least amount of leachate, where the SMDI treatment produced the most leachate. This table shows the irrigation effects on nitrate loading for both 2010 and 2011. And we didn't see any significant difference in nitrate loading, but that could have been due to the low nitrogen inputs for the putting green. We applied about 147 kilograms per hectare of nitrate for the year. And we did see significant differences in November, but we weren't applying irrigation treatments, so we didn't feel that that was relevant for this. And it wasn't biologically significant either, because it was 0.01 kilograms of nitrate per hectare compared to 0.02 kilograms of nitrate per hectare, which is not biologically significant. This graph, or this table, shows the irrigation effects on rooting depth, and the units are in centimeters, and we didn't see any significant differences until November 2nd, when the daily ET treatment and the RDAI treatment produced the longest roots at 15 centimeters. But in 2011, after we got out of the heat of summer on August 1st, the SMDI treatment had the deepest roots. And on our last sampling date on September 15th, the RDAI treatment produced the deepest roots. This graph shows the irrigation effects on 2010 localized dry spot percent coverage, where the y-axis is percent localized dry spot coverage and the x-axis is the sampling date. And localized dry spot coverage was significant on all dates but one in 2010. And on August 17th, all treatments were similar, and that was most likely due to ample precipitation leading up to the sampling date and highs in the mid-70s, which alleviated most of the LDS symptoms on my plots. But prior to that date, the SMDI treatment produced the most localized dry spot, and after August 17th, the RDAI and SMDI treatments were similar, producing the most amount of localized dry spot. And the stars above the data points denote dates when the data was significant. In 2011, we saw a similar trend, and the stars indicate when data was significant. On the first sampling date on May 6th, the RDAI and FMDI treatments produced the most localized dry spot. And after that date, the SMDI treatment produced the most localized dry spot, with the daily ET and the RDAI treatments being similar, producing the least amount. And here's a picture on September 22nd of 2011 of an SMDI plot with the localized dry spot. For irrigation effects on 2010 dollar spot incidents, we saw the significance is denoted by orange columns, and we saw a significance on all date but one. But the trend is that the SMDI treatment produced the least amount of dollar spot compared to both the RDAI and the daily ET treatments. And the units are infection centers per meter squares. In 2011, we saw a similar trend, but we didn't see significance until August 8th. But from then on, the SMDI treatment, again, produced the least amount of localized dry spot compared to the daily ET and RDAI treatments. So, in conclusion, the daily ET treatment incurred less LDS in both 2010 and 2011. So if you're in a part of the country where localized dry spot is a reoccurring issue, I would have to recommend that using a daily ET approach in order to avoid incurring localized dry spot. And also, the daily ET treatment required lower irrigations July through August of 2010 and June through July of 2011. In both of these months and both of these years, we didn't receive a lot of precipitation, so the turf was solely dependent on irrigation to produce good quality turf. The SMDI treatment resulted in the greatest irrigation and leachate volumes for both years, but incurred less dollar spot. So if you're not too worried about how much water you're using and you want to cut down on maybe your fungicide budget, the SMDI treatment could lead to less dollar spot and less disease pressure. And the RDAI treatment ended with the deepest roots in the study, but we didn't see any advantages either way for irrigation or leachate volumes. It was similar to the other treatments on most of the dates. So the idea that I want to leave you all with is the idea of integrative water management, and that would be alternating your irrigation scheduling methods as climate dictates to minimize your environmental impact and maximize your turf performance. So in the fall or spring of the year, when you expect to receive a lot of precipitation, you might be able to use a more deep and infrequent method, but when you're in the heat of summer, I recommend that you'd use a daily ET treatment to keep up with soil moisture and the plant's needs. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions. Yes?
Did you see any correlation there with water use and turf quality or density? Did you
look at that data? I did take turf, or the question was there a correlation with turf quality and water usage? And for both years, the daily ET treatment produced the highest quality turf. Yes?
Sorry if I missed it, but for the SDMI and RDAI treatments, you had to monitor the soil moisture to schedule the irrigation?
Only for the SMDI treatment, I monitored soil moisture.
Okay. So was that with a handheld device, or did you have
that was? That was with a Field Scout 300 by Spectrum Technologies using a 3-inch probe.
And how many samples would you take across the plot to determine what the average moisture was?
I would take 27 measurements across each main plot and average those measurements. Yes?
Kind of all determined together how much water the plant uses. So
So I'm not sure exactly what the question was, but could I maybe blend these treatments together to produce one scheduling method for the entire season? That may be possible, but we haven't looked into anything like that yet. In the back.
So we're going to have to hold questions for the discussion session for Mark. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.